Welcome to Social Justice Matters, a podcast from Social Justice Ireland. My name's Eamon Murphy. I'm Economic and Social Analyst with SGI. The first budget of the government of the current Dáil is a mere 3 weeks away. Budget 2021 will be a litmus test of how serious government is taking its commitment to the creation of a new social contract, as contained in the programme for government. It's also important because the COVID-19 pandemic gives this budget unique context. The economic and fiscal disruption created by the pandemic-related restrictions and lockdown measures presents government with an unprecedented challenge in framing this budget. The most important decisions will be around the fiscal stance. What approach will government take to the significant deficits that will characterise this budget, and most likely all budgets in its term of office? But all the many challenges that existed pre-COVID remain and cannot be ignored. Earlier this week, we launched our budget briefing, Budget Choices 2021. The document that tackles several key issues and gives fully costed budgetary packages in more than a dozen policy areas and additional costed revenue raising proposals. This week's podcast episode is the audio recording of that launch. You can listen here to our commentary on the key issues, or if you wish, you can follow it in tandem with our budget choices document, which is available on our website, socialjustice.ie, as we'll be referring to page numbers throughout the recording. The full video is also available on socialjustice.ie. And all of this is available under the article entitled Budget Choices 2021. Enjoy.
Good afternoon and welcome to the launch of Social Justice Ireland's Budget Choices for Budget 2021. So to crack on straight into it, what we're going to do is present our proposals for a fully costed budget, starting with my colleague, CEO Sean Healy.
Thank you, Colette. And the first thing, I suppose, that we want to talk about on the budget is the context. Now, if people have questions on anything that we raise or anything that strikes you, feel free to, you can send us a question online at conference@socialjustice.ie. That's conference@socialjustice.ie. And that we'll get that and we'll try and deal with some of the questions, at least insofar as we have time. Now, the context in which the budget is being formed, some of it we're very aware of. For example, the whole issue of COVID-19 is something that people are very aware of, the consequences of it, of the cost of it, and the fact that it's made a huge impact on the society and on the economy. But of course, COVID-19 will cost us an awful lot of money, but it won't be the only thing that would actually impact on the budget, because obviously we're facing into a Brexit situation at the end of the year one way or another, and that is likely to have quite an amount of impact on the economy and on society as well. But that's not the only thing either, because there are so many other pieces that are impinging in the global economy and things of that nature. So they all, if you like, put pressure on what the budget should be about. And in our view, there's need for a well-being budget that promotes social progress. We need a budget that is a well-being budget and that promotes social progress. And one of the reasons we would say that is that when you look back over the last number of years, we have failed to really reduce poverty dramatically. We're one of the richest countries in the world. We were that rising during the Celtic Tiger. We had a bank crash. We had to recover from that. We got the economy back to being one of the really almost richest countries in the world on a per capita income basis. We got a very low level of unemployment, but we still did not address the issue of poverty and social inclusion sufficiently. We did have some impact, but we didn't do the kind of dramatic impact that one would expect if we were to build a fair society. And part of the reason that that's the case is that we actually did not do the work on infrastructure and on services. When we're talking about infrastructure, we're talking about things like public transport, like social housing, like rural broadband. We didn't do all that was required on that. On services, we're talking about healthcare, education, childcare, elder care, those kinds of things. And I think we have a situation there that needs to be addressed. Part of the problem that we had, that we need to learn from, part of the context in the past, is that we had an approach for the last 20 plus more years that if we got the economy right, everything else would follow. Now, on numerous occasions, we have got the economy right. But in each case, we have boom leading to bust, leading to boom, leading to bust. And I think we need to address that issue. And part of the reason there, when we look at what's been happening, is that we didn't actually put in the infrastructure. We didn't deal with the services. We didn't kind of deal with these things in a simultaneous way. It is a false premise to say, get the economy right and everything else will follow. That is simply untrue. What we need to do is to tackle the economy and build a thriving economy without a shadow of a doubt. But we also need to go on to, at the same time, simultaneously, be dealing with the infrastructure and the services and a number of other things as well. Now, the fiscal stance of the budget, let's go on to that, because that's very important. I think it's very, like in that situation, it's critically important that the government does not take a traditional approach to this, which would basically look at what level of the deficit should be and then work backwards from there. What we need to do is put the focus on growing employment, protecting employment, reducing unemployment. And I think that's the critical issue. And everything else around infrastructure and services and the various other things that we're going to talk about later in this presentation, they will all go to that one issue. Now, obviously, there's a huge amount of money that's going to be borrowed, and that's accepted already. And this is in tens of billions. But I think what we would be saying to the ministers involved and to the government is that there's low interest rates at the moment, money is cheap, and borrowing cheaply to invest always makes sense. And that's what we should be doing. And I think this means, in effect, that the government should basically borrow the money. It's the same situation that every other government in Europe has. And they should all basically come together and borrow the money required, warehouse that particular COVID-related debt in Brussels, and put a very long-term loan in place. Something, and deal with it in some way like they dealt with the debts after the Second World War or the First World War, where they could roll out the debts for quite a long time, pay it back over a period of time, long period of time. So, and then you can deal with the actual budget itself overall in a straightforward way. Now, it's in this context, it's very important that we maintain economic capacity and that we work at the same time to create a more sustainable society. To do that, we need to put a simultaneous focus on infrastructure and services that I raised already, but also on just taxation and on good governance, because we need to involve sectors, all the sectors of society, not just some, in shaping the decisions. And we need to work to sustainability in the budget as well and deal with that, the fiscal stance in that context. Sustainability on the environment, but also sustainability in the economy, so that the choices we make in the economy are sustainable and the choices we make in the social dimension are also sustainable, so that we build a society that people want to live in. So I think they're the kinds of issues we want to start and contextualize. And now I'll hand you back to Colette to take it forward a step further.
Thank you very much, Sean. And again, just to reiterate, if anyone has any questions, they can email us at conference@socialjustice.ie or they can tweet at us at socialjusticei using the hashtag socialjusticematters or budget 2021. Now we're going to move to Eamon Murphy, and he's going to bring us through more of the socioeconomic framing and what needs to be done from that side of things. Thank you.
Thanks, Colette. And just to say that for those of you who are following it at home, if you check out the article that's just below the live stream, you can get a link to the document, download that PDF and follow the different pages as we're talking about them. So looking at page 19, every year we present a socioeconomic context for the budget. The last few years, there's been some positives mixed with some negatives. And we've tried to balance it out. Usually we have decent economic figures, decent employment numbers, which sort of balance out, in a way, the negatives we've seen with persistent poverty levels, growing homelessness, the prevalence of low-paid employment in the economy. This year, unfortunately, it's all bad news, or almost all of it. That's to be expected, given people are aware of the context. The previously booming economy that we had has given way to what's an unprecedented economic shock. Unemployment is at a level that we could never have foreseen back in March, whereas we still have many of the challenges that we faced even back then. As I say, the homelessness and housing issues, poverty and deprivation, which has actually been shown to have risen in the last year.
And also that prevalence of low pay in the economy is still there. So all the challenges that were there, including related to demographic issues too, they remain. And our low tax take, low investment and low spend model has shown itself to be incapable of addressing these issues. So I suppose the thing to emphasise with the socioeconomic context of the forthcoming budget, all of the challenges we faced at the beginning of the year are still there. They're now taken in a new context driven by COVID-19. The question then remains how to address them. And if you look to pages 5 and 6, the first thing we'll say is that what we need is funding. As usual, Social Justice Ireland is providing no shortage of suggestions as to how we can raise the money needed to deal with the issues that we face. Now, I'm not going to go through all 2 pages because they contain over 2 dozen proposals for revenue-raising measures that can help us to tackle these issues. I'll focus on 3 key ones. First of all, to say that the need for a minimum effective rate of corporation tax in order to ensure that corporates based in this country are paying their fair share towards society is still extremely imperative, perhaps more so than ever now, given the amount of money that it's capable of raising. We're predicting over an extra €1 billion in 1 year. You could raise almost the same amount simply by standard rating, both pension and non-pension related tax expenditures. And the key thing here is, of course, that by giving those tax reliefs or tax expenditures to everybody at the same standard rate, you're also making the tax system far more fair, as well as raising additional revenue. And the final thing I'd like to focus on in relation to taxation issues is to do with land taxes and property taxes. We do an extremely bad job in this country of taxing land. And we've been advocating for a much more active land management strategy as part of a way to address the homelessness and housing crisis. Part of that is going to be related to taxation, not just raising revenue for the government and for local authorities to spend on this, but also encouraging good behaviour. And overall, we have a collection of tax and revenue related measures and proposals that would, if they were all enacted, raise over €2.5 billion in a normal year. We don't expect 2021, of course, to be a normal year, but that doesn't mean that we don't take these measures for the good, for the long-term good of the economy and of society. On page 9, we look to, this is where we look at issues related to work and welfare. Now, we were delighted to see in the programme for government a proposal and a commitment to moving towards a living wage in this country by the end of the term of the government. It's been obvious, I think, to everybody that many of the most essential workers in our society, as has been highlighted by the current crisis, are people who don't earn very much and very, very often are earning below what it actually takes for a person to achieve a minimum decent standard of living in this country. So we think that the living wage proposal is extremely important. We'd like to see some movement towards that in Budget 2021. But this page contains a number of jobs boosting investment proposals in relation to infrastructure spending in areas like housing, of course, but also education, health, and improving the sustainability of Ireland's society and economy. These were needed anyway, but now so more than ever, given the context. And referring back to what Sean talked about at the beginning of this presentation, about protecting and encouraging employment. Maybe one of the key proposals from the entire document in relation to Budget 2021 is the commitment that we're looking for from the government to benchmark welfare rates at 27.5% of average weekly earnings. I think the lessons learned from previous boom and bust cycles is that when earnings are growing in the economy, unless social welfare rates keep pace, then the most vulnerable in society will fall behind. This was a group that were ignored in last year's budget. As I referred to earlier, we've seen an increase in deprivation rates in the most recent SILP data, and we're likely to see something similar again over the next 2 years if this group gets ignored again. In the long-term goal should be to benchmark the core welfare rates to that 27.5% of average weekly earnings figure. In the more immediate term, we're proposing 2 options to the government for Budget 2021. We'd like to see them either increase core welfare rates by €7 a year over each of the next 3 years or by €20 a year over the next 2 in order to reach the standard that we're setting. And finally, just to say in relation to welfare-related issues, we believe that, well, first of all, to say that we were very pleased to see the commitment within the programme for government to run a basic income trial in Ireland over the course of this this government. We think that Budget 2021 should include sufficient budget to administer this and to pay for it and to carry out the necessary study afterwards. Basic income, from a long-term point of view, is the only welfare, only means of distributing welfare in this country that's capable of meeting the needs of a developed Western democracy like Ireland in the 21st century and a developed Western economy. And finally, just on that page, in relation to overseas development aid spending, now is certainly not a time to abandon the most vulnerable in the world. Ireland has a very positive history in a lot of respects in regard to the type of aid that we've distributed and how it's spent. But over the last decade and a half, we've been something of a laggard as regards our commitments, as regards the United Nations agreed funding of how much money as a country we should be donating to overseas aid. Achieving that target, that 0.7% of national income, should be much easier given the context in which we're in of a contracting economy. The challenges for the third world are far greater than what we face here, and it's important that we don't forget that. And Budget 2021 should not be seen as an opportunity to renege on those commitments, but an opportunity to move in the right direction. I'll pass you back over to Colette now.
Thank you very much, Eamon. So what I'm going to do now is bring you through some of the investment packages. So we start on page 8. For those of you who are coming to the seminar a little later, the full document is in the article below what you're looking at now on our website. So to start off with housing and homelessness on page 8, essentially the problem is a supply and demand issue, and you know, linked to that is the affordability crisis that we have. There are approximately 133,000 households in need of sustainable housing solutions. So they're people who are on the housing list, households that are on the housing list. They're households that are in precarious private tenancies and in receipt of HAP, but who would otherwise be on the social housing waiting list if they're in receipt of rent supplement rather than being transferred. Their households accessing emergency accommodation, their households in, you know, precarious settings. And we need to start looking at our housing crisis. The government simply cannot continue with the failed housing strategy that has been in place since 2016. It hasn't worked. Its targets were low anyway, and it's failed to meet even those. In terms of eradicating homelessness, we're still looking at approximately 9,000 people accessing emergency accommodation. And within that number, we're looking at over 2,600 children. That is not sufficient in a society that was ranked one of the 5 wealthiest in the world. So we really need to address that. In terms of how we do that, we need to stop obfuscating our data. We need to start getting real with what we mean by homelessness. In order to properly tackle it, we need to actually look at the real extent of the issue. And to do that, we need to have a different methodology. And we would support the use of the ethos typology to do that. And essentially, in terms of our proposals for Budget 2021, we need to move away from this Help to Buy scheme, which disproportionately benefits those on higher earners, and instead invest in homelessness prevention, in Housing First, and extending Housing First principles to homeless families. We need also to stop privatising our public housing. We need to start retaining the ownership of state lands that are suitable for use for residential development and have local authorities and approved housing bodies develop those out for social housing and affordable housing use. And to this end, we're calling on government to commit to $1 billion to invest in social and affordable housing for those who need it. As part of that, we need also to rethink how we build, to rethink our construction industry and to move away from the large-scale capital projects and instead invest in smaller scale, high work intensity developments that will support rural and community development, that will bring much needed support into local economies. We need to develop a properly functioning private rented sector. No one can call our private rented sector functional at the moment. It is very much profit driven, and it's also being used in terms of a sticking plaster for social housing. We need to rethink how we deal with that. We need to properly enforce HAP anti-discrimination legislation. We need to align HAP with market rents. We need to invest in rental property inspections and tenant rights. And we need to scale up our cost rental to make rents properly affordable. We need also to allocate 5 million to the Residential Tenancies Board and 2 million to the Workplace Relations Commission in order to support those measures. And finally, in relation to housing, we need to bring vacant housing back into use. So we need to disincentivise property owners from hoarding land and from holding on to land. And to this end, we would urge government to introduce taxes on empty houses and a site value tax on underdeveloped land, which we believe would yield 75 million next year if that were to be introduced. Moving on then to investment in health. So this is obviously a very key issue for everybody at the moment, and in nationally and internationally. You know, we cannot do what has been done in previous budgets, and that is underestimate the amount of necessary spending. We need to deal with the existing levels of services and the additional services that are required. In terms of access to care, we need to really bite the bullet on this. Back in 2017, a report was published that put Ireland among the three worst countries in terms of access to sufficient healthcare. This is a real issue for people, particularly those who are on low incomes, particularly those who are experiencing or at risk of poverty. We have very high waiting lists in terms of outpatient care, and more than one in five on those waiting lists are waiting 18 months or more for care. This just simply is not sufficient. In terms of how we develop our care then, we have an over-reliance on acute care and hospitalisation. Our rates in terms of occupancy is in and around the 95% consistently. That is 20 percentage points higher than the OECD average. And it's not sufficient in terms of how we're engaging with people, how we deal with health within our communities, how we deal with health across the life cycle. What we need is to see more in terms of primary care, and we need to invest properly in community health networks and primary care teams. So what we would call for in Budget 2021 is to address these inequalities in our healthcare system and to develop a system that is actually fit for purpose. So to start the ball rolling with Sláintecare and invest that 500 million in infrastructure over the 5 years. So 500 million a year, for 6 years over the course of Sláintecare. We need to invest a further 50 million in community nursing facilities. We need an investment of 150 million in the rollout of these primary care community healthcare networks and to alleviate the pressure on acute services so that people who need hospital care can actually access it when they need it, but that healthcare is met at an appropriate level. We need to also reduce prescription charges for medical card holders, for all medical card holders, from €2 to €1.50. In terms then of mental health, we need to really tackle this, and particularly studies that are coming out through COVID at the moment is indicating a particular concern around mental health for children and for those who are cocooning, those who are particularly vulnerable and susceptible to the virus. We need to invest in the full implementation of the Vision for Change policy at a cost of 35 million. And in light of the CSO data in relation to increased alcohol and substance consumption, we need to start dealing with that properly as well, with an allocation of 50 million for alcoholism and addiction programmes. Moving on in terms of disability and carers, and we need to start redressing the difficulties that have been seen in terms of successive cuts to services from previous austerity budgets. We cannot simply go back to that, as Sean has said before. In terms of our proposals here, we need to introduce a cost of disability payment of €20 per week towards the cost of disability. We need to increase investment in disability services, including respite and personal assistance services, and alleviate some of the burden that's experienced by family carers. We need to allocate 5 million for the implementation of the UNCRPD, that's the Convention on Rights of Persons with Disabilities. We need to increase the domiciliary care allowance, which has not been increased in years, from €309.50 to €330. We need to expand the free travel scheme to include people in receipt of domiciliary care allowance at a cost of €4 million. And we need to increase the carer support grant from €1,700 to €2,000. Moving on then to older people. And again, you know, we've seen the devastation that COVID has caused. We've seen it in terms of those people living in congregated settings and nursing homes. We've seen it for those who have been cocooning. And there's been a huge amount of data from Tilda and from Alone in terms of the impact that that has had on people, in terms of that broad brush approach to those over a particular age, and the loneliness and the social isolation that has been experienced, notwithstanding the fact that there's some incredible work happening at a community level. So in terms of supporting people to age well at home, the first thing we would look at is the increase needed for housing aid for older people and people with disabilities. And we would propose and really urge government to tackle the difficulties that people are having with a significant investment of €85 million towards this. We need also to invest in social care, including housing packages and home care packages. This is an area that we really, really have failed to grapple with. We still have, as at the end of last year, a waiting list for home care packages of almost 8,000 older people. And even when people are getting those packages, they're looking at an average of less than 1 hour a day. So we need to really build that up and to make it sufficient for people in order to allow them to age well at home, in order to have a life within their community and to have a life that's suitable for them. So we would propose an investment of €125 million. In terms of those then who do need nursing home care, and there's a standard kind of 3.7%, 4% of people in the 65 plus age bracket who will need and do need nursing home care. But that care has to be supported. It has to be aligned with their needs. It has to be properly resourced, and it has to take account of the safeguarding issues that have been identified over the last number of months. So we would propose a package there of €32 million. And we need to increase the capacity of the HSE safeguarding teams. We know, for example, that almost 30%, over 27% of safeguarding calls have been made by people aged 65 plus. This is something that we need to grapple with and support our older people. So we need to increase the capacity of the HSE safeguarding teams that are doing phenomenal work with support of €2 million. And then in terms of, you know, an adequate income, obviously, you know, we need an adequate income to live. As people are spending more time in rented accommodation, the adequacy of their income in retirement is being called into question. So we would call for an increase in the contributory pension by €7 a week to universalise this payment, and something that could be paid for in a large part by standard rating, as Eamon said, and the private pension contributions and reforming employer PRSI. Moving on then to page 16, and direct provision. So we know that direct provision is, you know, it's categorised basically by high occupancy rates, poor conditions, and a series of human rights abuses. And that is based on data, both nationally here, but also in terms of international reviews. The Joint Oireachtas Committee on Justice and Equality last year called for a move away from private operators, which is based on a private and for-profit model, and more of the provision of accommodation and wraparound services through approved housing bodies, something that we would also support. This is also reflected in the Programme for Government's commitments to abolish direct provision and to move away from that for-profit model. In Budget 2021, we would call for an increase in the adult weekly allowance of €6, for a total of €1.3 million, and to extend child benefit to all children living in direct provision for a total of €2.7 million. So a package there on direct provision of €4 million. On that same page then, on page 16, we're also calling on measures to support those experiencing domestic abuse. So an estimated 1 in 5 women in Ireland will experience domestic abuse over the course of their life cycle. 10% roughly will need a refuge and accommodation supports of some type, and the other 90% still need some level of support from the services that are doing phenomenal work in this area. To this end, we would call on government to really grapple what they have called in the programme for government an epidemic of domestic, sexual and gender-based violence. So to increase capital allocation for refuge supports in line with our commitments under the Istanbul Convention to the tune of 15 million and to increase current allocation for ongoing service provision, for training and for legal supports for people in this situation for 30 million. So a package there of 45 million. And then finally from me, we'll go back to page 10 and we'll look at investment in communities. So communities and community and voluntary, the community and voluntary sector has been rightly lauded by government, by state agencies for its response to COVID. And that tends to be the way with the community and voluntary sector. Where there is a crisis, when there is an issue, the response tends to come and it comes fast. We saw after the last recession, post 2008, the huge supports that were created by the community and voluntary sector, the huge response that was given there in light of cuts to that area. So we would like to see a restitution of those cuts. The sector is estimated to lose $500 million in fundraising revenue, and we would like to see Budget 2021 start to address that and start to address that funding gap. In terms of public participation networks, we talk about the need for meaningful social dialogue. That has to happen at a national level, but also at a local level, so that people within communities have a real say in how those communities are shaped. The public participation networks are doing great work in this area, and we would like to see their continued support through the investment of another 2 million in those networks. In terms of social enterprises, and particularly those dealing with deficit demand, Budget 2021 should allocate $1.5 million towards resourcing the National Social Enterprise Strategy, aimed particularly, as I say, at those that are dealing with deficit demand. And then for community development programmes, again, governments must increase funding through LEADER and through SICAP, the Social Inclusion and Community Activation Programme, with an additional allocation of $2 million in Budget 2021. Now, to move on for the rest of the investment packages, I'm going to pass you now to my colleague, Michelle Murphy.
Thank you, Colette. So just a reminder, for any questions, email conference@socialjustice.ie or tweet us @socialjusticei with the hashtag Budget2021 or Social Justice Matters. Now I'm going to continue on page 10, looking at investment in the regions and in rural Ireland. And this was just to echo what my colleague Eamon said, that the challenges that faced rural Ireland prior to the current pandemic remain, and these include an ageing population, higher rates of part-time employment, lower median incomes and far greater distances to everyday services, and higher poverty rates. In addition, now some regions are looking into a potentially prolonged period of unemployment, particularly those reliant on the tourism sector, and we have the potential impact of Brexit coming in the next couple of months. So I really want to focus just on two areas here. So the first one is an investment of 300 million in remote working hubs, broadband and smart villages. So it's the one silver lining out of the current crisis is that the increase in remote and flexible working is a huge opportunity for rural areas in terms of attracting people back to where they're from, offering a better quality of life, a lower cost of life, and greater access to schools and more outdoor amenities. However, the strategies and plans to promote rural and regional economies are highly dependent on quality high-speed broadband. So we're proposing this investment in the regional economic development zones, the local enterprise offices, to look at developing remote working hubs, developing smart villages, meeting our digital agenda for Europe targets, and really looking at how we can build on remote and flexible working. The second area now that really ties into this is a 100 million euros investment into regional development and transition. So this investment should be to align the various policies that we already have, the rural development policy, our regional employment plans, Future Jobs Ireland, the climate plan, our post-COVID recovery package, the July stimulus package, and what's coming into the budget with the principle of just transition and with developing sustainable local communities and livelihoods and supporting jobs and employment. So this money should primarily be targeted at developing local cooperatives and regional farm-to-fork strategies, education and training for current and future generation of farmers, moving to more sustainable agricultural practices, and improving and expanding public services to promote and support rural living. And in addition here, we're looking at additional funding for Enterprise Ireland and Fall to Ireland, a total of 50 million to support projects with a rural focus, rural tourism, and those industries that have been impacted by COVID and will be impacted by Brexit, and an additional 10 million then in investment in walking and cycling infrastructure. Moving on then to page 14, we're looking at sustainability and the environment, which will also have an impact on rural communities. Now, I'm going to preface my comments here, particularly in terms of revenue raising, is what's in our document and our proposals and the costings that we have and our estimates, they're based on what this revenue or what these policy would raise in normal circumstances. Obviously, budget 2021 is a very different scenario. However, that is not an argument against introducing these measures in budget 2021, legislating for them so that they will be there to generate revenue and behavioural change as our economy recovers. So we are looking for an increase in the carbon tax of €7.50 per tonne in line with the Programme for Government commitments, and that the money raised for this should be used, 159 million in normal circumstances, to invest in a just transition fund to fund measures targeting low-income households, households in fuel poverties, and rural dwellers and communities. In order to promote behavioural change, people must have access to valid alternatives. We're also looking to introduce a commercial air transport tax. We also proposed this last year. Air travel is one of the most polluting forms of transport there is. So this tax would be between €5 and €30 per passenger and yields 210 million in normal circumstances. Another area we propose the government focus on is retrofitting and a nationwide retrofitting programme with an investment beginning at 75 million. Retrofitting is one of the most effective ways to reduce our emissions and reach our climate targets. So we need to look at a national programme here, and also an investment in renewable energy and low carbon power systems of 75 million. So renewable energy it's one of those policies that's not only labour intensive, but you have a long term return and you will meet some of our climate and environmental commitments. And finally, the other area I'd like to focus on here is establishing a network of community energy advisors. 2 million, it's not a huge amount of money in the larger scheme of things, but these energy advisors are there to ensure that households in energy poverty can avail of whatever retrofitting programs or grants that are available, and also those hard to reach groups, because we need to ensure that we don't leave anybody behind as we move to a cleaner and greener economy. Now, moving on to the next section here, in terms of keeping with sustainability, that we have a focus on waste, so a deposit and return scheme, a levy on single-use coffee cups. But I suppose there's two areas I'd really like to focus on here. Investment in our national biodiversity and data centres and in our national parks and wildlife service. We propose a 10 million investment because internationally, economists at the OECD and others have identified natural capital spending in areas such as rural ecosystems and biodiversity as fast-acting climate-friendly policies that generate an immediate impact and long-term return. So if you're looking for an immediate impact and a long-term return, this is what your focus needs to be on in budget 2021. Also looking at a circular economy package and how we continue to keep those items that we use in our daily lives in the production cycle, and we don't keep discarding items. We need to begin to reuse the items that we use in our everyday lives. Finally then, just a sustainable development framework into economic policies. We need to ensure everything's sustainable socially, environmentally and economically. A new national index of progress, ensuring that we have well-being, social and environmental indicators considered along with our economic indicators, and that our investment packages, particularly those in relation to COVID recovery, are aligned with our long-term environmental social and economic goals, because they will set the environmental path for the next decade or more. Now, moving on to page 12 and looking at investment in education. COVID-19 is obviously one of the greatest disruptions in educational opportunity across the world and in Ireland, and it has exacerbated educational inequality. So looking at one of the ways that we can address this here on COVID, I suppose, has thrown a spotlight onto our persistently high pupil-teacher ratio and our persistently high class sizes, which are consistently above the European average. So we're looking for an investment of 13.5 million to begin a process of reducing class sizes and pupil-teacher ratios, continued investment in debt schools of 15 million, and looking at how you support those who are most vulnerable in our education system. So looking at back-to-school clothing and footwear allowance, school meal programme, looking at supporting the education needs of young people in direct provision, and capitation, an increase of 10% in capitation grants at primary and second level. Now, moving on to further higher and adult education. So we are still waiting for the implementation of the Castles report over 4 years later. So we're looking for an additional 40 million as the first step towards meeting the core funding requirements for HEIs in budget 2021. Significantly, we're looking for an investment of 40 million in further education and training to expand our apprenticeships and traineeships to meet future skills needs and advance the circular economy, particularly at regional and community level. This could have a significant impact. And the other area I would like to focus on here is transition skills fund, and 10 million euros to be invested in this fund, targeted at young people who are not engaged in education, training or employment, and targeted also at those people employed in sectors whose jobs are at high risk of automation. Finally, looking at adult literacy, numeracy and digital skills and lifelong learning, we're looking for an investment of 30 million euros to expand the Human Capital Initiative to focus on levels 4 and 5 and those groups who are identified as underrepresented in the National Access Plan, and an additional 30 million into upskilling pathways, adult literacy, numeracy and lifelong learning. As I said, the full details of our education packages are on page 12. Also on page 12 is investment in children. So here we're looking for 50 million increased funding for TUSLA to provide increased social provision and support for children and families. In order to further the delivery of the European Pillar of Social Rights work-life balance, we're looking for an increased paternity leave by 2 weeks in budget 2021 and increase in paid parental leave by 2 weeks in budget 2021. Then significantly, we're looking at how you provide quality, affordable, accessible childcare for working parents and working families. So we're looking for an increased provision to ECCE of 0.3% of GNI Star, so that's 65 million. But we also need to look at how we develop a state-funded model for child care. We need to begin this in budget 2021, basing it on elements of the ECCE scheme. So we need to separate affordability for families from wages in the sector and from professionalisation of the sector. So we're looking for 85 million in budget 2021 towards this. And now, finally, I'm just going to reference that we are looking for, it seems like a small amount, but an increased funding for the Arts Council to embed arts and culture participation into the ECCE framework, particularly targeted at those families from lower socioeconomic backgrounds who have less participation in the arts and culture, and also families in direct provision. I'm going to pass over to Sean, who will sum up the entirety of our investment packages.
So we've taken a very quick tour through the various ideas and proposals that we're putting up for the budget for 2021. In summary, I think we need to just going down through the main ones. We're talking about over 1 billion additional euro in health, disability and carers. We're talking about 540 million more on sustainability, because that's such a critical issue, not just environmental sustainability, which is critically important. And I think more and more people realize that, but also that what we do is economically sustainable and socially sustainable. Housing and social housing in particular has been, and homelessness, these have been one of the great scandals, if you like, in recent years in such a rich society, that we're not really providing appropriate levels of accommodation. We need an additional 1 billion, we would say 1.15 billion more in budget 2021. Now, the issue of rural, regional and community is also important because there has been and continues to be an urban-rural divide. And the fact is that there are higher levels of poverty and exclusion and so on in rural Ireland than there are in urban Ireland. And this needs to be addressed. And what we're talking about is a very substantial package of over 500 million, as has been spelled out already. We need close to 350 million additional money on education, a critical issue, obviously. And we, with the sort of problems that there have been in education in the last 6 months, people realise these, how important these actually are. And then children and families need, we would say, 241 million in addition to start the progress the process of dealing with the kinds of issues that children and families have to face in this context at the moment. And then at the other end of the age spectrum, we're talking about pensions and older people. We're talking about 1.17 billion more. Now, in case people say this is all about spend, we also look at the whole issue of taxation. We argue very strongly for just taxation and a fair, by broadening the tax base and by having a fairer tax system, reforming the system and so on. And we make a series of proposals that Eamon has outlined that basically amount to 2.6 billion. And I think that's the key issue in that situation. Now, then when I suppose having set out all those proposals and all of that, I think it's important to recognise a few things, that in a way, all budgets are value-based documents. And when government is looking at its budget for 2021, it's basically deciding what matters to this government. And in that context, they're making decisions about allocation of resources to move Ireland in a particular direction. And what we're saying is that this direction needs to be socially progressive, and it needs also to promote well-being. So you've got well-being and social progress, and these are critically important dimensions, if you like. Now, to achieve that, we're basically arguing that you can't take an approach that says it's the economy we should get right and everything else will follow. We're basically arguing that the government needs to ensure that its approach to the budget is guided by a framework that, of course, prioritises and supports the development of a thriving economy, but recognising also that you need decent services and decent infrastructure if you're going to have a vibrant economy. And then if you're going to deliver those services and infrastructure and deal with those deficits, we have to have just taxation. We have to understand how we're going to pay for what we want, and that's critically important. We also need good governance, and this involves engaging different sectors of society, not just a few sectors, all sectors of society, to ensure that what they have to contribute is heard, and that to ensure that there aren't voices in dealing with serious issues that are not actually being addressed, if you like. And finally, but not least in any sense, but finally in the sense of how important it is, the whole issue of sustainability is critically important. Now, we've said over and over again today, and we say it all the time, we need to get to a point where we have environmental sustainability, economic sustainability, and social sustainability. And these need to be a part of where we're going. These need to be a part of the budget. But I suppose underpinning all of what we're saying is a recognition that there is need for a new social contract. That agreement between the citizen and the state, between the state and the citizen, that we've had for a long time, has basically broken down. And there are too many gaps. There are too many divisions. There are too many questions that can't be answered. So we're basically saying that there's need for a new social contract. And that social contract needs to have these kind of five pillars, if you like, as at their core, that we're building a vibrant economy with decent services and infrastructure, with just taxation, with good governance, and with sustainability. And I think to deal with the challenges Ireland faces, we must create a vibrant economy with those pieces that and we must do it simultaneously. And that's the only way that we can ensure that we are tackling issues like inequality and poverty and deprivation at the level they need to be dealt with. It's not okay to have 680,000 people in poverty. It's not okay to have 200,000 children in poverty. It's not okay to have 9,000 homeless people in Ireland. It's not okay to have tens of thousands of families without appropriate accommodation. We are a rich country. We need to face that even in a time of COVID. And we need to be building a pathway, and we need to be building a society that can deliver on these various components. And that basically is what we're proposing, a budget where nobody is left behind. Now, just to recall again, that if you want to send us questions, we're going to deal with questions and issues that arise now. You can always send us an email at conference@socialjustice.ie, or you can send us a tweet at socialjusticeye, which is our Twitter handle, but use the hashtag, hashtag socialjusticematters. So I hand you back to Colette to bring us around these questions and so on.
Thank you very much. So I've just been keeping an eye on the email just to make sure I'm capturing the questions. And there are a few kind of on the fiscal stance, on that same kind of theme around. So I'll direct the first one to you, Sean, if you don't mind. In relation to the idea of borrowing to address the deficit and the fact that it's going to have to be paid back at some point, mm-hmm. Is that not just going to put us into austerity?
The answer to that is no, it doesn't have to be. We made this mistake just over 10 years ago when the banks crashed. And what we did was we took an approach that many of the countries in Europe did, and we were pushed very hard by the Troika and others, the European Commission and so on, and the European Central Bank, to take a particular approach, which we did, which focused on ensuring that we weren't increasing borrowing by anything more than absolutely the minimum that was required. The result of that was that we actually seriously damaged Ireland's economy far in excess of the damage that was going to follow anyway. And I think there's an issue there. We lost hundreds of thousands of jobs that we did not have to lose. Very interestingly, over 10 years ago, we were failing, if you like, to recognize that it's not just about the economy. It's not just the economy, stupid, to change, if you like, seriously change Bill Clinton's old motto for his election, original election. He used to say, it's the economy, stupid. And I think most people across the world who comment on these things nowadays recognizes that it's not just the economy, stupid. Most people recognize that what happened back then, 10 plus years ago, was actually a failure. That it wasn't what was good for society. It even wasn't good for the economy. What we succeeded in doing was rescuing Ireland's economy. We turned it into one of the richest societies again on a per capita income basis. But what did we find at the same time? What did we leave happen at the same time? We left our poverty levels still with 680,000 people in poverty. We didn't deal with our housing crisis. We didn't deal with our two-tier healthcare system. We didn't deal with our inadequate funding in education. We didn't deal with our urban-rural divide. We didn't deal with rural transport and public transport generally. And we didn't deal with issues like broadband. Suddenly, all of these issues become important when we realize that, in actual fact, they're all essential components of a modern society. We need to be dealing with these issues simultaneously, not just building the economy and then everything else will follow. Nor should we be putting the emphasis on balancing the books. The idea that in some way or other, a country is the same as a family, and that therefore the country needs to handle its accounts the same way, or its money the same way a family does, that is simply nonsense. It doesn't actually that's not a claim that's made by any intelligent economist today. What we need to do is to recognize that we must keep the economy going. We must build a thriving economy, but to do that, we need to do these other pieces that we're talking about, and we need to do it simultaneously.
Thank you very much. That was fairly comprehensive. Sticking with the theme of the economy, we've been asked, in terms of rising unemployment, how can we possibly talk about increasing the tax take? I'll give that to you, Eamon.
What we're talking about as regards the an increase in the overall tax, and I guess maybe the person who's asking this is asking in relation to income tax, but it's important that I think people become aware that, or more aware at least, that the tax system doesn't equate to the income tax system. What we're talking about is broadening the base, making sure that certain sectors of society make a fair contribution to the public services investment that we need, but also that we use the tax system to encourage better behaviour. We are not in any way suggesting increases in the income tax in the forthcoming budget, and even if that were a policy of ours, which is not, now would not be an appropriate time for it. So the two really are not connected. And in many ways, what's required at the moment in order to ensure that current employment is protected, that more employment is generated, what we need is a counter-cyclical stimulus at some point within the next 12 to 18 months in order to generate more employment, but also what's quite clearly needed, given the deficits we've been talking about over the last hour, what we need is additional infrastructure investment, which of course in itself is, when well directed, can have a very positive influence on employment in the economy. So the two really are not connected.
Thank you very much. We have also got somebody who is concerned in relation to the health proposals, that there should be more in relation to the ICU beds, given where we are with COVID, obviously, whereas we're making more in relation to community health networks. And I'll take that if I can. You know, in terms of what we're dealing with in the current emergency, our over-occupancy rate is tied in with our lack of capacity at a community level. If we had a properly implemented primary healthcare network and a community healthcare network, that would alleviate some of the burden in the acute centres, in the hospitals, which would then obviously build or allow for more bed spaces. I mean, I share the concerns in relation to the capacity issues that we currently have. We're facing into another long winter. We've got COVID, we've got flu season, and there are going to be many people, unfortunately, waiting on the hard chairs in the A&E. However, if we had an appropriate community response where we had sufficient GPs, where we had adequate numbers of public health nurses, where we had proper home care supports, where we didn't have 500 plus delayed discharges, then that would alleviate some of the burden, and it would free up spaces. So it is all very much connected, but I do understand that concern.
Just might be interesting to sort of add one point there, which is the need for integrating other parts of policy into healthcare. So, for example, the housing issue, like accommodation is critically important to older people. And the issue is if appropriate accommodation is not available, then they might wind up being forced into nursing homes or whatever because they have no choice and they can't operate. So, in actual fact, investment in the community health networks and in the integrated approach at a primary care level will actually save a lot of money, save the state in the long run, save the state a lot of money, and therefore, I think, produce a more balanced and sensible healthcare system. And by the way, be more in keeping with Sláinte care as well.
And then I just have one final one, and I will direct this very much at, because it has to do with education and the urban-rural divide and the digital economy. So it's all for you, Michelle. Given that everybody that seems to be working remotely at the moment, is there really an urban-rural divide in education and the economy?
Well, yes, there still is an urban-rural divide. The obvious one is, lower median incomes. Demographics are completely different. You have an older population because up until now, people obviously have to move to urban areas to study and to work, particularly if you want career progression. I suppose that's the really important thing here. The remote working and flexible working offers an opportunity now for particularly families and professionals who want to relocate out of an urban setting with a very high cost of housing, extreme difficulty in accessing childcare and school places, commuting and transport issues, an opportunity perhaps to move back to the county, the village, the town where they're from. And actually, prior to the pandemic, a survey of commuters from the commuter belt of Kildare and Meath, more than 80% of them would actually take a pay cut in order not to have to commute into Dublin. So there is still an urban-rural divide. However, if we invested in remote working hubs, in our smart villages, in the REDS and the local enterprise offices, you could turn this around and you could really revitalise rural communities. You could have a vibrant and thriving rural and regional economy, but it requires the investment being put in and the expansion of public services to support people to live in those areas. In terms of education, educational inequality and the educational divide, that exists in urban and rural areas. And those children who have been most impacted by the school closures are those who experienced inequality in the first place. Your children attending deaf schools, the digital divide was exposed as we moved to online learning. So we do need investment in education because, concerningly, a recent report from the OECD estimates that for the students from about first class to 6 years, so grades 1 to 12, so that cohort who have experienced a huge gap and interruption in their education and their learning are looking at a lifetime earning loss of 3%, a minimum of 3% through their lifetime as a result of the interruption in learning due to COVID-19. For those who experienced educational disadvantage, obviously that's a higher loss throughout their lifetime earnings. That's on an individual basis. If you're looking at a national economy, you're looking at a loss of 1.5% of GDP, if not more. That's a conservative estimate. So we require significant investment in education to address the inequalities that were there prior to COVID and to ensure that COVID doesn't exacerbate them further, and to look to the future skills needs of the economy as we transition to a cleaner, greener economy and what that means for us as a whole.
Thank you very much. I'd just like to wrap it up by saying thank you to everybody for tuning in. Apologies again for the technical glitch that we had at the beginning. Thank you to all of those who sent in your comments and your questions to our email address. Thank you very much. Budget 2021 is an opportunity for the new government to set out its stake, to really show what it thinks about society, what its priorities are when it comes to how society should be run. We have set out our proposals here this morning, and again, they're available on our website, socialjustice.ie. And we hope that the government will take on these proposals and will create that more equal society. Thank you very much.